This is the Afternoon Brief on High FM with Michael McKenna. Focused reporting, sharp analysis, and the local stories shaping our lives. Daily updates in a fast-paced world.
A justice system under pressure. Is South Africa losing the fight against crime? Well, it remains one of the biggest concerns for us, yet despite billions being allocated to policing, also prosecutions, courts and correctional services, many citizens still feel unsafe. Now, during the presidency budget vote debate this week, the Democratic Alliance argued that South Africa's criminal justice system is failing, citing low conviction rates, corruption, weak investigations, and a lack of accountability. Now, the comments have once again sparked debate about whether the country has the institutions, also the leadership and political will needed to effectively combat crime. But it begs the question, is the criminal justice system truly failing? If so, where are the biggest weaknesses and what reforms are needed to restore public confidence? Joining us now to unpack this issue, we welcome David Ansara. David is the CEO of the Free Market Foundation and also a longtime commentator on governance, also public policy and institutional reform. David, good afternoon to you. Thank you so much for joining us on today's show.
Good afternoon, Michael. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Oh, the big question, David. Great to have you on board. The DA says South Africa's criminal justice system is failing. Looking at the evidence, do you agree with that assessment?
I think that one doesn't have to be a policy analyst to determine that South Africa's crime and criminal justice system is under severe strain and is experiencing systemic problems. And I think you only have to look not only at the very high murder rate, about 36 per 100,000 people, which equates to about 86 murders per day, and about 5 rapes per hour on some statistical measures. So those are the numbers. But when you look at the governance structure of the police and the broader security establishment, you're seeing really a crisis in terms of management and personnel, with many suspensions and investigations currently underway. Obviously, the Madlunga Commission is foremost in that. But I mean, if we just look at, I mean, we have an acting police minister, Feroz Kachalia. This is because of Senzo Mkhunu, who's fighting corruption allegations. He's the incumbent police minister. The National Police Commissioner, Fani Masemola, he's been suspended. So he's facing corruption-related charges alongside 12 of his colleagues. Shadrach Sabia, who's the Deputy National Commissioner for Crime Detection, he's been accused of improperly interfering with the political killings task team in KwaZulu-Natal. I mean, it's a very long list, and the fish rots from the head. I think we have severe problems at the top of our leadership in the security apparatus.
If we can just break that down, where do you think are the most critical breakdown points? Would you say it's the police, prosecution, or the courts? If we can just narrow that down.
So look, I think there are problems across the prosecutorial and court system. I mean, I think one of the issues has been the capacity of the National Prosecuting Authority. We've had successive NPA directors who have either been unwilling or unable to prosecute high-profile politicians or politically connected people. And I think that that raises some question marks about the integrity, the capacity, and also the independence of that institution. I mean, bear in mind that the National Director of Public Prosecutions is selected by the president. And one of my observations is that South Africa has this tendency towards commissions of inquiry, not only the Madlunga Commission, but you cast your mind back a few years ago to the Zondo Commission, looking at state capture. And these are very effective for generating transparency around what has happened, but there's very little accountability that follows from that. And, you know, really, to put it bluntly, you need to see high-profile politicians in orange overalls being prosecuted and convicted of crimes where they have been guilty of misconduct. And so I think the public is right to be a bit skeptical about some of these commissions of inquiry, and in many respects, politically, it's very useful because you can play for time and kick these issues into touch while you deal with other political concerns.
Just to answer a question coming through, David, South Africa has no shortage of laws on the books, yet many criminals, they appear to operate with little fear or being caught or convicted. So is our biggest problem crime itself or the lack of consequences?
Look, I think South Africa has a unique crime problem. People often attribute that to high levels of poverty and inequality, but there are many other African countries which are far poorer than South Africa on a GDP per capita basis that don't have the same levels of violent crime. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a history going back to the ANC's so-called liberation struggle where you know, MK fighters, for example, were actively encouraged to defy the authorities. There were weapons caches that were hoarded. You know, so is it any wonder that KZN remains a kind of hotbed of political violence? So I think we need to kind of look at the sociological factors, but then also the political ones. You know, we have a history of the politicization of the security apparatus going all the way back. You know, if you think of somebody like Jackie Salibi, who was very politically compromised. And so the purpose of the law enforcement authorities is to uphold the rule of law and to protect the safety and security of citizens. But the policy of cadre deployment has very actively politicized that very important institution. And so when you have high-ranking police or intelligence operatives pursuing political vendettas rather than focusing on their core job of preventing crime, it's not a surprise that you have some of these runaway crime problems in the country.
David, interesting, just to continue from where you just left off, question coming through, we can perhaps just expand a little on it. How much of the problem is corruption versus capacity and skills shortages?
So look, there are some resource constraints. You know, mm-hmm. if you consider, I mean, just to point out a small detail, Parliament recently heard a presentation by the police that said about 7,500 of its vehicles are out of service. That's about a quarter of all of the police's vehicles are out of service. And most of that is in KZN and the Northern Cape, where those problems are being experienced. Something like the ICT system of the police, there's a 5.8 billion rand shortfall there. So there's a lot of money going to personnel costs, but you know, I think that there are a lot of good police. I mean, you know, people trying to do their jobs under difficult circumstances. But I think the police is let down by this failure of leadership that we were speaking about a moment ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when we talk about corruption, it's not some kind of aberration. It's the very specific manifestation of the politicization of the police force. And I think as citizens, we should be concerned by that and push back against it.
Or perhaps politicization extending elsewhere, David, which leads me to my next question. You mentioned earlier on state capture. Let's look at that legacy. To what extent do you believe is then the criminal justice system dealing with the damage caused by, well, as has been proved, years of state capture, cadre deployment, and institutional weakening as a result?
Yeah, I don't think we need to belabor this point. But what I think we should be talking about is the solutions. You know, I think very evident that there are systemic problems in the police, as we've just outlined. And I think what is incumbent on South Africans in the face of this rampant crime problem is to develop mechanisms to solve safety and security problems on their own. And when I say on their own, I mean at scale. So, I mean, if you consider the community that this radio station serves, I mean, the Jewish community is facing severe security threats. You know, if you consider the attempted pipe bombing at the shul in Cape Town last year.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of violence against the Jewish community in other parts of the world. And so the kind of community safety initiatives, something like CAP and also other security initiatives, that's really about taking security into your own hands. And the private sector in South Africa, I think, is, and the private sector security is really important for this. But you also need to look at opposition-controlled municipalities. I mean, you opened this segment right. by talking about the DA's comment.
Mm-hmm.
And the DA is in government in the Western Cape and in Cape Town and other municipalities. And, you know, I think it's incumbent on those governments to start to solve some of the security challenges in the absence of proper policing from the center, from Pretoria. So I don't think, if you consider the violent crime problems in the Cape Flats, it's not sufficient to say, well, this, you know, there's a constitutional separation of powers, and, you know, that's the National SAPS's responsibility to stop gang violence on the flats. You know, I think like initiatives like the LEAP program, the Law Enforcement Advancement Program, is a good start, but you actually need to start having boots on the ground, investigative capacities, for example. So SAPS's forensics unit has basically collapsed. You know, its ballistics unit, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what's stopping the city of Cape Town from developing its own ballistics forensics capabilities? You know, and that, you know, I think that that's also something that you could potentially contest in the courts around
sure.
the appropriateness of the scope of local government. And so we already have entities like the JMPD in Johannesburg or the kind of city of Cape Town's policing. But, you know, expanding their remit and not asking for permission, just doing it. And then, because in the absence of a capable state at the national level, you need to solve the problems at the local level. And I think that that's where we're at the moment in terms of this crime crisis.
I guess what you've just commented on supports this question that just come through, David. The question reads, is political leadership doing enough to support institutional recovery?
Well, I think you're asking the people who created the problem to solve the problem. I don't think that's sufficient. As I was saying, I think freedom-loving South Africans, people who are concerned about safety and security, need to accept that they're on their own when it comes to the political leadership and dealing with the problems attendant to that. And I think once you have that realization, it's a little bit scary to confront that truth. But once you have confronted that hard truth, then you can start to solve the problem. And I think that's the only way we're going to resolve this.
Yeah, at the same time, do you think that the government, the GNU, creates an opportunity for meaningful reform, or are political compromises making it more difficult to tackle these issues decisively at this point, as you begin to wrap up this conversation?
Yeah, look, I would like to see particularly the Democratic Alliance flexing its muscles within the GNU. I think the president has been weakened recently by these ongoing investigations into the Palapala affair.
Mm.
And I think that's an opportunity. I think the DA leader, Jordan Hill Lewis, last year, before he was elected to the leadership, said that the SAPS Act needs to be amended with one word to basically allow local and provincial entities to investigate. I think was the word that he wanted to include in the SAPS Act.
Mm.
I forget the relevant clause. But, you know, that could be part of the ongoing negotiations that come with participation in the GNU. Mr. Hill-Lewis could say, well, you know, we'll support you, Mr. President, in a motion of no confidence, but, you know, you must give us these powers, concede these powers. So I think, my organization, the Free Market Foundation, has been quite critical of the GNU, but I think if the GNU structure is to work, it shouldn't be an objective in and of itself to have a GNU. The GNU must be an instrument for effecting policy change at the economic level, but then also on this question of security. And I think decentralization of policing is really essential. And, you know, because the apparatchiks in Pretoria have demonstrated that they either don't care or they don't have the will to solve this problem. And there are lives at stake at the local level that I think gives moral justification for kind of pushing those boundaries a bit more. So I think, I would say that somebody like Ian Cameron has done an excellent job in kind of instilling accountability in Parliament again within his portfolio committee on crime and policing. But I would say that his colleagues where they operate in government should start to adopt a more muscular approach to crime and policing.
David, as we wrap up, not to rush you at all, please don't get me wrong, I'd just like to pose a two-pronged question if I can, by beginning by asking you, can public trust, for that matter, on the basis of what we've just been discussing, looking at public trust, can it be realistically be rebuilt, so to speak? And when you look at our criminal justice system today, are you then optimistic that it can be turned around?
Well, I think there's no such thing as a point of no return. Many countries have come back from bigger disasters than this. And I think it is a question of leadership. I think the Free Market Foundation, we're strong proponents of limited constitutional government. So we want to slash the size of the state and make it smaller and make it force it to focus on its knitting. But actually, policing and security is really one of the core functions of the state, to protect life, liberty, and property. And so I think a lot more resources, but also political attention needs to be focused on this. This segment, this interview was triggered by a report on the presidency, filing its budget. And, you'd be mistaken for thinking this is the budget of the whole country, but it's just for the office of the presidency. And just his office, it's kind of an 816 million rand budget just for the office of the presidency.
Wow.
And that includes the deputy president, the minister of women and children and people with disabilities, and the planning ministry and all sorts of things. So it's almost like a kitchen cabinet within the presidency, and duplication of a lot of actually even some of these state security functions that we've been talking about. The Ministry of Sport, Arts and Culture, in our view, is totally irrelevant and should be scrapped. You can still be passionate about those things, but not believe that there should be a ministry. But when it comes to crime, you really need to put a lot of state resources and capacity behind solving that problem. And I think you get more of what you tolerate. And if you tolerate crime, you'll get more of it. And, I'm not a crime expert by any stretch, but boots on the ground, proper investigative capacity, following through on prosecutions, and also rooting out corruption within your own ranks, I think are the basic ingredients for success when it comes to policing. But then also, the state can't do it on its own. It needs communities. If you think of a civil rights group like AfriForum, they've done an incredible job with countering farm attacks in rural areas. You think of local community policing forums, neighborhood watches. The police just simply do not have the capacity to deal with all of these problems. And you actually need these community-based structures to come to the fore and to help solve some of these problems at scale.
Indeed. As we continue to grapple with crime, corruption, and governance challenges, the debate is no longer simply about how much money is being spent, but whether the system is delivering the outcomes which citizens expect and deserve. David, thank you so much for joining us on today's show. David Ansara, CEO of the Free Market Foundation. We've been chatting about crime remaining one of the biggest concerns, and yet, despite billions being allocated to policing, prosecutions, courts, and correctional services, many citizens are still feeling unsafe. And as we, grapple with crime and corruption and governance challenges, it's no longer about how much money is being spent, but whether the system is delivering. It impacts economic growth, investor confidence, service delivery, and ultimately, the public's faith in the institutions that are meant to protect them.